You're now listening to the segment From a Woman's Perspective with Dr. Christina Williams for the Primetime Power Show. Good evening, everyone. I'm excited to be here this evening. And I have an exciting guest this evening also. However, before we do all that, you can just say happy anniversary to me because this is the anniversary of the Primetime Power Show. 11 years and going strong. So we appreciate you guys and we love you guys and thank you so much. But it falls on the night that Dallas whips the Eagles.
I knew it was a but.
I just had to put that in there. But listen, we're going to get started because I don't want to be late when it comes on. So this evening, I decided that we needed to really get into ourselves and what it is that it means to have your spirit being transitional and how we go from one place, and some people call it one phase to another phase and things like that. But tonight, I brought my friend and my pastor, Reverend Curtis Morris here, the president. The pastor of Bethany Baptist Church in Chester, Pennsylvania. So let him introduce before I get into him. He has a wonderful testimony and a wonderful example of a transitional spirit and how that happens and what happens with it and how we just believe that we are living the life at one particular time and then it transitions to another situation and how things can drastically change for the good or for the bad. So, Pastor Morris, how are you?
Great, doing great. Thank you for having me on this show. Thank you for this opportunity.
I'm excited to have you here. And oftentimes at church, you start off or sometime during the sermon, you will give us an example of your life before Christianity and how you transitioned from being this one person up to this other person and that it was a process. It's a step. Mm-hmm. But now give us a little bit of information about what that means. I know, but what that means to you in terms of from your teen years and the things that you were doing and going through, especially when you thought it was hip and it was cool and it was all of this stuff. Then of course, something happened to have your spirit transition over to something else, where hope and all these other wonderful attributes came to be. Just tell us a little bit about you and your journey. Well, that's actually the reason why I asked you to come on there, because you are stuck. And I just believe that it is easier. We have this conversation often. And so you talk about that. So talk about that with us.
Well, I think primarily most of our young people, number one, it's nature and nurture. We're all born with the propensity to do something psychotic and crazy. And then they're nurtured in an environment that has normalized behavior that violates God, violates culture. I grew up in a community where I told you the first time I met a man who thought cheating on his wife was a problem. I was 28 years old. Everybody I knew cheated. So, you know, we thought, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. What I've learned early was Professor Dr. Ernest Berry told me I was cognitively underdeveloped. And it's how I see myself in the world. They see themselves in no other light that, because by nature we can do it. And then we're nurtured in our environment. It depends on where you come from. So you live what you learn. So they see that. And in the Black community, including the sub-marginalized community, you know, the ballers are the Negroes who are hustlers and chasing the women, the drug dealers, and the ones with all the money. So it becomes the norm. And I think what happens is, you are consciously incompetent. You don't even know it's a problem. It's normal. It really is. You know, it's what we do. It's not what we do. It's who we are. If we've become our environment, you take our sin nature we got from Adam and our nurtured environment, guess what? Including for African-American males, because we're still dealing with post-traumatic slavery syndrome. We're dealing with the systematic racism, marginalization that creates these communities. So you only what you come from. And unfortunately, in those communities, growing up, if you wanted to work a 9-to-5, if you was a smart kid, because the majority of people wasn't, you was beat up and bullied and looked down upon. It was normal. So I was only being what I came from. My oldest brother, he was part of the Black Mafia. My other brother was a felon, you know. My dad wrote numbers and my mom played, you know, she took the number book for him. So we sold corn liquors, you know. So I thought what I was normal, you know. Really, you are not even aware. When we see these young people, they're nurtured and natured in that community. That's normalization for them. In fact, doing what's right is wrong to them. Wrong is right and right is wrong from a, you know, cultural and a norm perspective. So, and then who has the courage to stand up and be different from your environment? We're all made in terms of we like community. So the community, we have to make our way in that community. Dr. Chris, that's what we do. And salvation and gave me the impetus, woke up my eyes one day and realized that this is not normal. And then we have to go through a process and watch this. We become consciously incompetent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We know, okay, so, and now shame and embarrassment. Then we don't have the resources, right? Because the trauma that you deal with in the subculture, like my brother was killed. He was shot 18 times. But 11, 12 years old, I was shot at because we were living in what I call concrete Vietnam during the gang era. And mm-hmm. that because we don't know, we don't realize my sister was killed. So we live with this trauma, but we don't have the necessary resources to even deal with that issue. And when your whole community is that way, we have a subculture of mental health traumatized individuals all through our communities with no resources to set us free. So guess how we do? We medicate ourselves with alcohol, drugs, and sexuality, which is the only thing that we have access to. I can't go in the hood. I don't have a 9-iron to go 18 holes to golf. I can't get on a boat and go somewhere. So what I do, I medicate myself with what's in my neighborhood, drugs, alcohol, and sexuality. And then that becomes an addiction.
Right.
And henceforth, then we try to take that, and then we here we are, a sexual addict, right? And then you're going to call yourself being in a personal relationship with somebody, and you can't. So you have her, but you have a side person, this one. And then because irresponsibility and you don't really care, you make children that you can't take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a cycle.
Or you didn't plan on having.
Wait a minute.
You're not prepared.
I dare say 75% of the kids in the subculture, nobody's planned it. My oldest daughter, I didn't plan her.
Right.
You know, her mother was, unfortunately, her mother was a source of healing for my trauma through sexuality and irresponsibility and not thinking, because guess what? I'm in so much darkness and pain in my own self and soul. We create a human being, right. Unfortunately. And so you see that all through the subculture, all through the marginalized community, the Black community in this country, including in the urban areas all over the nation.
But what makes us believe, we're going on a political side, what mm-hmm. makes us believe that dollar signs and these false resources, talking about nonprofits that just change their missions based on the grant or whatever the grant is. And so feeding, like you said, we end up feeding or we end up being culturally pampered in the things that we are doing wrong. So at some point in life, we find out that it's not working. And right. So for the Black male, it is hard because I believe that there is a tug of war between the natural ancestry of the Black man and the society that they try real hard to adapt in.
Yep.
And so with that being said, it becomes the war. And I believe that the system recognizes that and then plays on that.
Oh, God. Yes.
And then end up, the only thing we had as Black people basically was our.
Off?
Yeah, I lost her.
So, what we're going to do, let's, Pastor, we'll take a break.
I'm sorry.
Okay, she's back. Okay, go ahead, Dr. Williams.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so what we have is what we did have, even if we didn't have materialistic things, but we did have family. Mm-hmm. And then when that was taken away from us,
mm-hmm.
Or we allowed it to be taken away from us because of a lack of knowledge. So then we're in a place of another war or another tug or another transition that we have to go through as a people and as individuals to say what's right. And what's mm-hmm. wrong? Are we supposed to, is it a wonderful thing for women to have all this power? Is it a wonderful thing to find our men in a perpetual state not of being unemployed? Was it a wonderful idea to educate our men to advance above the average male. You know what I'm saying? So I'm, and the reason why I wanted to talk about this is because these are transitions, and actually, they're actually life changing, and they're tradition, and they're transitional. So we go from this to this to this to this to this. Let me just say this. I ask you another question. I want to get back to you. The thing that I really wanted to talk about a lot is these things that we go through in terms of developmental. Now, when I was in, and I know you missed a social worker. So when we have children that go through a developmental stages, and they're supposed to be normal stages, some of our books, our textbooks, when I was in social class, talked about deviant behaviors. And talked about what was normal, what wasn't normal, and this and that and the other. So, however, I look at that same book with it in a different edition, and guess what it says? Mm-hmm. Most of those deviant behaviors that I studied that labeled them deviant behaviors are no longer deviant behaviors. You know what they are now?
What?
Alternative lifestyles.
Okay.
So how do you get adjusted to alternative lifestyles that is different than what you were brought up with?
Mm-hmm.
How does that transition happen? When does it happen? Does it happen in adolescence? Does it happen when you get to college? Does it happen after? You know what I'm saying? When you graduate, at some point, there's a transition that happens as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
When?
Well, I think when structuring people's cognitive view, how they see the world, is the best time to do that. And the shape, unfortunately, during adolescence, during this stage of development, which in turn, this is the stage when your brain, the part of the brain that's fully developed, that understands what's right and wrong, really doesn't fully develop to mid-20s. And then if you had trauma and abuse, sometimes it's delayed. So it's always when you're young, you build who you are, usually before you're 25, 26 years old. And unfortunately, your brain is not fully developed. And so when you don't have guidance and you don't have any structure for it, then guess what? Who has your ear the most? Well, Google, right? We live in a generation of technology and information where prior, when I was a child, those who were important to me were parents and people as close. Now, guess who raises our children? Well, social media. So their cultivation comes from that. And it's, watch this, it's antithetical to their grandparents' vision. And guess what? Their grandparents' mindset was based upon piety from a Christian faith that was a large part of the Black reality, but then the educational system of America was in contradiction to the things of God. It's what Pablo Freire wrote in his book, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. It's called consciousization, where your consciousness is being cultivated by the things that, again, nature and nurture, the environment which you play in. And since we're African-Americans, we only make up 13%, and we don't, watch this, we don't make no noise. We don't make no developments. We pick up that what the majority culture places in us. That's why W. Du Bois talked about the double consciousness. And it's who we are as people struggles with who we are as Americans. And so our children and our young people are basically, cognitively, they have a bivocation, they have a, what you call a bipolarist. They know in their depthness of their family tradition is different, but guess what? They're overwhelmed. And then guess what? 76% of our children come to single parent homes. So how do you call normalization when they never see normalization? The normalization of two parents, when you don't see that.
Right.
76% of them come from single parent homes. So what do you call normal? What do you call,
right?
Wait, okay, your nice little, here it is, your nice little Judeo-Christian concept of a man and a woman. Well, here it is. It's supposed to be a father and three kids. No, it's a father and three daddies.
Right.
So how do we deal with this in our conscious? Okay, what we see and what we live, that's the bivocation. That's the double, that's a double consciousness from my soul to what I see. And when you're a child and you're young, you're not able to discern. And by the time you're able to discern in your late 20s or 30s, it's too, as you in fact, you have a multicultural perspective, which causes you stress and trauma anyhow. Because it's two of us in all of us.
Yes.
Again, like I share with you, from my perspective, I was raised nurtured to change, to have a bunch of women.
Mm-hmm.
I was 28 years old when I realized, and I'm not talking about whether you were single or married. My father had 15 children. have a brother born the same day. So, you know, what's supposed allegedly right and what's real is two different. So this man I was working with, I said, these women trying to have sex with you, and you need to get with them. He said, I'm married. And I told him, I said, but they got to do with anything.
Wow.
See, and so that renewing of, now how do we redo? Where did I learn this from? Home, culture, the whole issue. I saw it in my family, uncles, men, black men. Again, the addiction issue of dealing with the trauma. So you have this hodgepodge cultural, and guess what? Those who ruled this country wanted to keep African-Americans in a place. They created systems that would create this type of structure, i.e. A for dependent children, right? Because what happened was in 1979, almost 36-37% of black males were going to college on what we call the Basic Education Opportunity Grant. Ronald Reagan came in 1980 and wiped that out. Then you have the aid for dependent children coming with the welfare. At the same time, then Bill Clinton comes via prison industrial complex system. Then you had the same time, you had the post-industrialization. You remember when you can get living wages, which broke up the black family, places like Bud. You know, those companies all went overseas. Why, you know how Flint ended up the way it did? Because everybody in Flint lived in Detroit, and Detroit and Flint, they was real close to each other. Well, GM shipped their plant down to San Antonio so they can get the Mexicans to come in and work for nothing. So now you break down the family structure because the black work middle class has been destroyed. At the same time, you have prison industrial complexes. You stop the basic education opportunity grants. And then you flood the black community with crack. I have a daughter who's 48 years old, be 49. Her mother and I was a teenager. I was 19, mother was 17. We had an 18-year-old child. Her mother didn't want to marry me because I thought I was going to marry because now she gets for dependent children. I went to court because the Department of Welfare took me to court because you had to pay child support. They told me if I gave her more money than what they said, they could arrest me.
What?
That was the, yeah, because she was getting money from the government, right?
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And if you now, you know, ain't nobody overpaying, right? But if I asked the judge, I can't pay no more. This is, if you do that, Mr. Morris, we would have you for contempt of court. So I had to sneak money through my sisters to get my daughter's stuff. So how do you think she grows up as a welfare baby thinking? And my daughter and I had this conversation. My daughter's 40. Well, she didn't realize until about 2 or 3 years ago because we had a conversation about this. So now and I'm disillusioned by what we call a nuclear family.
Right.
So what is my family?
That's a good question.
So now, and then, guess what? Again, with the power of the media, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to the students and I was doing adjunct work in Lincoln a couple of semesters. I asked them to pull up their usage time. The average usage time daily for the young people is anywhere between 9 to 10 hours a day with a system, right? You know what the internet has. And then here's another issue. I found out that 80% of young girls before they're 15 have seen hours of hardcore pornography.
Wow.
So how does that shape your morality? So, and you know, with pornography, you know, you have all kinds of sexual acts.
Right.
And you don't have the parental guidance with 76 of them. And then can you imagine this? Then you have three other siblings, but they got three other daddies.
Wow.
Because the economic system creates that where, there it is. Remember the movie Claudine?
Yes.
There you go.
I do.
And so
absolutely,
that's systematic exploitation to keep people in a permanent class of poverty and marginalization. And then here's one. Now let's go to a Bible verse. Judges says Japheth was the wild man because he was a son of a whore.
Mm.
Male children cannot handle a female. He can handle his father cheating, but he can't handle his mother, a male
right.
child. I knew my dad was a whore. I knew that's who he was. But my father was dead for 7 years. My mother was married for 39 years. I happened to come to Philly to visit her one day and go in the house, and she's not there, and some man was in her room. Me and my brother drugged him. I wanted to be there because that's my mother. But my father was dead. She was a grown woman. Because in my mind, nobody's supposed to touch my mother, but I didn't want my dad to sleep with her.
Right.
You saw these angry boys?
Yeah.
And so listen to some of the hip-hop. 50 said, confused, saw my mama kissing a girl.
Wow.
Snoop said, ain't no fun if my homie can't get none. Angry, you know, it shows the anger that he has with his mother. because of her, being promiscuous. A male child can't handle that. It's only from a male perspective. My dad, all my brothers, but if my sisters would have did that.
So different story, right?
So you see the confusion in the culture, and then there's no foundation. Because, guys, I don't care what you say, they need to see it.
Yeah,
and so we can espouse all we want, theological, the Bible says this. But then, come on, you know, anybody blind, you go in the church, you don't see gay people in the church. Listen, you go see, like I said, you took away all the homosexuals in the black church during the great era of the church. You wouldn't have no choirs.
Right. Yeah. Well,
and even in the pulpit. So the orthodoxy don't meet the orthopraxis.
Yes. Yeah.
So we have this tension. And so how we deal with it, it has to be dealt. Here it is. What changed me from being a whoremonger, she said, "Digger, you bring any more stolen stuff in this house, I'm going to call the police on you," robbing people, whatnot, was understanding that the love of God, which was so gracious and merciful, not because of it, but in spite of me, mm-hmm. and really understanding that grace and love of God, mercy, you know, helped me. Wait, I use this example. I didn't stop doing crazy stuff and still because I was afraid to die or go to jail. When you're in that culture, you really don't care. Guy named Donald Lane said this while I went to college. He said, "Curtis, because my older brother, when he got murdered, and my other brother got shot, and I got how he said, she said, your mom, you know, can't handle that." And I thought all what my mother tried to do for me motivated me not to want to hurt her again. Well, that's what the cross is. All what he did for me is not that I'm getting better because I'm worried about him getting me. I'm trying to get better because he didn't get me.
Say that one again.
Yeah, I don't try to live right because I think God going to get me. I try to live right because of what he did get me. And so when you start helping people understand the love and grace of God and the mercy of God, don't mean you're going to be perfect. I'm not what I want to be, but I'm not what I used to be. And in the meantime, what happens is when these behaviors in your life start changing and you get the fruit of that, you say, whoa, you know, it was great, Chris, when I woke up, I started getting out when I was 11 years old. Only graduation I remember was my seminary graduation. Sixth grade, ninth grade, 12th grade, college, all of them. Because guess what? My family predisposition to alcohol. So I'm a recovering addict. You know, it was nice waking up on Saturdays and I got money in my pocket, no hangover.
And remember what you did, right?
And wait a minute. The last time I was out, I woke up in my mother's house, not my apartment, with a crackhead. And I picked up from down Richard Allen Project and brought all the pieces of money to my mom's crib.
Wow.
And not worrying about, wait a minute. Every time I saw the police because I'm riding dirty, the peace of God started, I'm like, okay, wow, this is all right. You know, I'm not what I want to be, But, partly why it took me so long to pastor a church was because I knew I wasn't ready. My first pastor licensed me and ordained because I was doing campus ministry because I wouldn't take this church. I knew I wasn't ready. I had too much PTS in me, PTS. Mm-hmm. And it showed itself. You remember that sheriff, grabbed a couple of the members from the church and was ready to beat them up because of the way I was growing up in the hood, moving in the project, street gang war and all that's crazy, a brother being shot. That stuff is like, you don't even know it until the situation arises, how you respond. And I knew I could not pastor a church that early in the game because I had not got that trauma of being shot, at the trauma of fighting and almost being, being stabbed and all that good stuff. You grew up in it. So it's a process. And the Bible says, now we are the children of God, that doth not yet appear what we shall be, but when he shall appear. So I know I ain't going to be like him till I see him. But in the meantime, I got a little bit more peace. And guess what? I've been married all these years. You know what? With my first wife, I got married in August, February was divorced. I got married 25th, August 30th. I got somebody else pregnant. Because I learned it from my dad.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, listen.
So these are the things.
Listen, I could talk to you forever, because we had these long conversations, but I have to go because know the games have started and I know that some other people come. However, Pastor Morris, I am going to invite you back because the conversation and your experiences and that you have is very relevant, not just to our children, but to our adults. And some of us wonder why we do what we do, or why things are the way they are, or why is it that things don't change for me? So we can go more in some of those things. And why is it that trauma follows me? Or the fact that, why is it that I have to go through this. Why do bad things happen to me? And so we can go on that, because if the bad things didn't happen to you, then no, you would not look forward to any good things.
Right.
But in any case, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming and spending some time with us, especially on the evening of when your team is going to get whipped. And so, you know, I appreciate you doing that.
Dr. Williams, it's 7-7 right now. It's a tie. So we let try to get that first touchdown, but your team going to get there behind. They're going to beat Dallas like they stole something.
I know, but I know that's how you feel. But guess what? It won't be the first time, but it's going to be the last time if it does happen. So listen, everybody, I just want to thank you guys for tuning in. I certainly hope that you got at least some understanding on where you stand in life and how your spirit transitions in doing some of the things that we go through that might be, that traumatizes us and sets us back. We often say we take one step forward and have to take two steps back. So I'm going to invite Pastor Curtis Morris to come back again so we can go into some of these situations and find out who we are, how we adapt, and why we're the way we are right now. So with that being said, I want to say good night to you all. I want you to be safe. I want you to love each other. This is yours truly, Dr. Christina Williams, from A Woman's Perspective on the Primetime Power Show on Primetime Radio. I'll see you next week. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the exclusive segment brought to you by the Primetime Power Show. Check us out for the live radio show Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, live on Primetime Power Radio. For more information, go to our website, primetimepowershow.com. Thank you for listening.